But at high noon, I'll never forget it, was getting close to the end of the float, and I still like to throw a crazy old beetle spin once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up an ultralight rod with a 4-pound line on it and sailed it way back up under an overhanging tree, and the water just exploded. Biggest fish of the day, biggest smallmouth I'd ever hooked onto in an Ozark stream. And it lasted about a half a second, you know, ping, and Corey fell back to the sea.
Camel boots on my feet, bow in my hand, walking in the early dawn to climb the
Redbone, what would you say if I could tell you that you could kill a buck on a certain day?
I would say you're crazy. There's no way to predict how the bucks are going to move.
Well, you're wrong. There's a new camera out called Wise Eye Technologies. These guys can predict the actual deer movement, exact time that a deer is going to come through.
Really? Wise Eye Technology?
This camera has 5-megapixel pictures, has a GPS system built inside, and it's an experience using this camera. It collects data and tells you the movement, wind direction, everything.
On a camera?
On a camera. WiseEyeTechnologies.com.
And how do I find out more information about these guys?
You go to WiseEyeSmartCam.com. I'm using them. You should, too. Make your hunt easier. Use WiseEye.
WiseEye presents Welcome to American Roots Outdoors. Again, if you're a smallmouth fisherman, this show is for you. If you're a fisherman, bass fisherman, it's Smallmouth River Fishing Part 3. And I'm calling via phone from my cabin lodge. Redbone is in the studio, and so is Wayne Locke. And we want to give a big shout-out to LP Iron and Dirt Works. They're one of our partners. They're actually coming here to my house this evening to help me hook up the water for Mallory's house. Guys, what are you all doing today?
Mudding and taping.
I went to a funeral this afternoon for one of the neighbors whose wife died of heart disease, and running back and forth between here and Springfield, checking on my dad, who is still in very bad condition, battling meningitis. So that's about consumed my life these days.
We are praying for your dad, Redbone.
Well, we appreciate that. Wish I had better news to report, but right now things are just kind of where they are. Anyway, and also happy Father's Day this weekend, Alex, as the show is airing on Saturday. Father's Day is tomorrow, Sunday, June the 18th. So happy Father's Day to you. Wayne, happy Father's Day. And
thank you.
All the dads out there listening today, happy Father's Day tomorrow.
Yes, happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. You know, I want to touch on that real quick. A father, what is a father? To you, explain what a father is, Redbone.
A father is someone who provides for his family. And I'm talking about emotionally, physically, financially, spiritually. You got to do it all. When my first son was born, somebody bought me a little statue thing, which were popular back in the 1970s. And it says, anyone can be a dad, but it takes someone special to be a father.
So much truth in that.
And I've held on to that that was 1979. I've still got the little statuette. And I thought, that's how I need to live my life.
Yep.
Yes. Wayne?
Yeah, there's actually similar to that. There was a coffee mug I saw years ago, and it said, anybody can father a child, but it takes someone special to be called dad.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing, just switched around.
Yeah.
But there's so much truth in that. I mean, it does take something special. But, I mean, I would agree 100% with what Redbone had just said, but I would also add on there, be a protector. I wouldn't hesitate a second to jump in front of a car to save one of my kids or, for that matter, any other kid, but,
depending on how big the car was. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, if it's a Chevy, you ain't got to worry about it, 'cause it ain't going to hurt much if it hits you, but,
that's right.
But I would add protective to that.
If it hits you, it wouldn't hurt you.
Yeah, it took him a second to get that.
I'm a Chevy guy, so don't ever mouth a Chevy. Anyway, guys, a father to me, again, I agree with both of you. A father to me is somebody that you will look up to. And that father, if he's a good father, He will instill great things within you, things that you will pass on to your children someday if you have children. And the Almighty Father of all is God, our Creator, and Jesus Christ. So that's what I think of when I think of a father. And I think of my father, L. Rio Zine Rutledge, that served in World War II on the USS Yorktown aircraft carrier. My dad was many things. He was a cook. He was a veterinarian. He was a carpenter, a logger. He could do anything. My dad really made me look up to him. So that being said, our caller's calling in right now, our special guest, Mr. Bill Cooper. I'm going to merge him in here. Stand by before we go to a break.
All right, so Alex is taking care of that and getting our guest on. I think we'll go ahead and go to our first break of the day. Folks, you're listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and his friends. We'll be back with our special guest, and we're going to talk smallmouth fishing in just a moment.
This is Brenda Valentine, and you're listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends.
Cutting off the farm, wishing on some love. I've been on a big boy for a while. I can load him in the back of my truck. We can take it to a holler.
Hey, Redbone, did you hear about that new deer feed?
What new deer feed?
Hey, Buck Grits, boys, you ain't heard of that yet?
Buck Grits?
BuckGrits.com.
Well, tell us about it. What makes it better than any other deer feed?
Well, Buck Grits has got the protein a deer needs, it's got the fat a deer needs, it's got the amino acids, it's got the energy, it's got it all, brother. It's going to bring them back after the rut, and it's going to put a rack on their head.
And it's going to help the lactating does, I assume, too, after they have the fawns.
That's right. Keep the fawns going and get them for the next crop.
Well, where can I get Buck Grits?
BuckGrits.com. You can get a sample, you can order it directly from the website, and we're coming to a retailer near you.
If you want a healthy deer herd, use Buck Grits.
Across the creek, up a big old hill, year after year, got my hunting gear.
Hornady Ammunition presents Welcome Back to American Roots Outdoors. And if you're just joining us, we promised you a special guest. Our topic is smallmouth river fishing. But when I think of smallmouth river fishing, I think of many people, many things. And I think about a guy that helped me in the outdoor industry, that interviewed me many times to get me exposure and to get information on deer hunting, turkey hunting, even smallmouth fishing, is Mr. Bill Cooper. He's a legend, Hall of Famer, a fisherman, Hall of Famer, and a great guy, a Christian brother. Bill Cooper's on the line with us. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hey, Alex. Man, glad to be on. Been a while since I talked to you, man. You know, we got a lot of history behind us, but it's always fun to catch up.
Yes, it is. Wayne Redbone, Bill is also the owner of Living the Dream Outdoors podcast.
Mm-hmm.
He's done many a show, a very popular podcast. We want to encourage all of our listeners to go over there and subscribe and listen to Living the Dream Outdoors with Bill Cooper. This guy, his story is pretty neat. We're going to kick it off right here. Bill, who is Bill Cooper? Where did Bill Cooper come from? Where was he born? Talk about your parents.
Well, I tell you what, our folks go way back, you know, to Tennessee, way back in the old days, you know, and some of our folks didn't have such a good reputation, you know. I was always told they hung or shot most of them, that we just threw them and got away.
So what year was you born, Bill? Talk about that.
Hey, my father and grandfather both moved to Mississippi County, Missouri, and they were cotton farmers down there. Those guys actually cleared 120 acres of cypress trees. Now, you're talking cypress tree take 8 or 10 men to reach around. If you can imagine that, cut those down with cross-cut saws, dug the stumps out, and pulled them out with mules, you know, and turned that into cotton land. And it was low ground, you know. We actually had a bayou that run across the backside of both of those places that come right out of Mississippi River, man. And, Alex, that's where I learned to fish, man. I was catching 7-8 pound largemouth out of that bayou when I was 8-10 years old. You know, but you never knew what you was going to catch because it come out of Mississippi. We caught a lot of big carp. I mean, huge crappie, pound and a quarter bluegill, just about anything you could think of. You know, of course, a lot of catfish. And man, we had a wild cane patch on the north side of the farm, and those things would go 14, 16 foot. And And I spend every dime I made hoeing and picking cotton to go fishing, you know. And I'd cut a bunch of those cane poles, get me some old staging lines, some big hooks, and you could dig earthworms. I'm not kidding you, 16, 18 inches long right out of road ditches, so I never ran out of bait. And it was so much fun to go down that bio, rig up about 30 of those cane poles and job them down in the mud, come back next morning, check them. Of course, half of them be gone, big catfish or carp, jerk them out of mud. I swam after a few of them, you know, you see them trucking down the bayou.
I bet in that day.
You never did tell us what year you was born, and Redbone's got a question, Ben Wayne. But what year was you born, Bill?
1949. Redbone?
49. Yeah, well, my question, Bill, would be, I bet back in that day and time, the early 1950s, catching those fish coming out of the Mississippi River, they were probably still safe to eat at that point, weren't they?
No.
They
were not. Yeah. We used to gig a lot of fish in the backwaters, you know, carp and buffalo and gar. Now, this is the honest truth. I'm surprised I'm still alive. But we were south of the Ohio River, and of course, south of St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
And the river was so nasty back then. This is honest truth. We'd eat those carp and buffalo, and we didn't think anything about it. You'd burp oil. I mean, motor oil. It tasted like petroleum. That's the truth. That's the truth.
Wow.
And the river actually, you know, the Clean Water Act come along, the river got cleaned up a lot after that, man. But, yeah, we ate a lot of nasty fish. We were just poor people, man. That's all I can say.
You know, if I
survive, you know.
Yeah, if I can follow that up, my father-in-law, who would be about the same age, he used to tell me he grew up on the south side of St. Louis, and he used to tell me they used to go down to the riverbank with forked sticks, and when the river would go down, and they would stick those forked sticks up in those holes and catch rabbits, and eat those rabbits, you know, that it just amazes me what the people during that time period did just to survive and just to have something to eat. He said they'd go catch 10 or 12 rabbits and sell them for, you know, a quarter a piece. Or they'd take some home and eat. And they said that's how they made their money.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. We, of course, always had beagles, rabbit dogs, and black and tan coonhounds around. And we ran up down those bayous. We killed a lot of swamp rabbits. And, yeah, you know, when a rabbit run up in a log, yeah, that forked stick was a trick everybody knew, you know. You'd run it up in that log and twist it a few times. You had that rabbit, man. You'd jerk him out of it. I'd put a frown on that today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
it was when he was talking about how dirty his river was and how nasty it was, and he was surprised he's still alive and he was burping up oil. It reminded me of the the Cuyahoga River. You know, our river up by us in Cleveland there actually caught fire.
Really?
Yeah, it actually self-ignited and caught fire and burned for a few days. And that's kind of, we were known as the mistake on the lake because we're the only place around where your water could catch fire.
Boy, that,
you didn't want to eat nothing
crazy
coming out of there.
Crazy.
Yep. You didn't want to eat nothing coming out of there.
Well, Alex, one of my favorite stories from down there, and I've probably told it a million times, me and a little buddy of mine, one summer, we was about 10 years old. We was catching lots of carp, about 5, 10, 12 pounds, you know. And there was a black family lived up a gravel road from us. We was off on a dirt road, but I don't know, it was probably a mile and a quarter over there. And we were pretty good friends of them, but we'd call them, his name was Henry, and we called her Miss Genevieve. And Miss Genevieve was an awesome cook, man. We'd walk by her place. She cooked on an old wood stove, you know. And we just want to smell the cookies and the cakes and stuff. Once in a while, she'd give us a cookie. But one time when we was catching them carp, Miss Genevieve caught me on the gravel road. She said, "Boys, did I hear y'all catching lots of them carps? I want you to bring me some. They give y'all a quarter piece." So me and my little buddy, man, we got to stick it up. We knew we'd catch a tow sack full of them things. And we figured we'd make $3, $4, $5 a piece. And this was early in the week. And we was planning on going to a show in town about 15 miles away on Saturday afternoon, see? So Tuesday, man, we caught, almost a grass stack full of them things. And we could carry them about 15 feet, and we'd have to set them down and rest, you know. It took us over 2 hours to get them over to Miss Genevieve's house. We drug them up on the front porch. Here she comes. And, oh, Lord, the mercy, boys, I ain't got no money today. So we, you know, put all that work in, no money. She said, but check your mailbox on Friday. She said, I'll leave your money in that mailbox. Well, we must have walked that quarter mile out that dirt road, that mailbox, half a dozen times, you know. And finally, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we opened that mailbox lid, and there laid 2 quarters, quarter apiece, one for him, one for me.
What a great story.
Oh, man, you talk about two broken-hearted little boys.
You will never forget that. You'll never forget that. Hey, everybody, we're going to go to a break. We come back. We're going to talk more with Bill Cooper about smallmouth river fishing. This guy is one of the greatest of all time to catch some smallmouth. Their nose up. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more American Roots Outdoors right after this.
Hi, everybody. This is Aaron Tiffin, and you're listening to my old buddy Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. And good friends.
And my old pair of hunting boots passed on down, planted deep in the ground around your heart, so you never gotta worry.
Hey guys, it's food plot planting time here in the Ozarks and all across the country. What are you planting this year, Wayne?
I'm going to put some smorgasbord in with a whole lot of clover.
You're going to put some extra clover in it.
What? Smorgasbord? What is smorgasbord?
Man, it is a variety of annuals and perennials that'll get you through fall time, winter time, and all the way into spring.
It's awesome. You want to plant healthier food plots to track all kinds of game? Go to www.eagleseed.com. It's a smorgasbord. You know, we all get tired of certain things. The smorgasbord has everything. Your deer will love it. Eagleseed.com.
American Roots.
Buck Grits presents Welcome to American Roots Outdoors, segment 3 of the show. Our special guest, Hall of Fame fisherman, Mr. Bill Cooper. This guy is a legendary outdoor rider and Ozarks native now, and born and raised in Mississippi County in Southeast Missouri. Told us great stories, segment 2 of the show. And what we're going to get into right now, now that everybody knows who Bill Cooper is and what he is now. So, Bill, before we get into the smallmouth, just a few more things here. What magazines have you wrote for, and what accomplishments do you have?
Oh, my goodness. I'm 74 years old. I'm kind of like the insurance man, you know. Living that long, I know a thing or two.
Yeah, you do.
I always say this, Alex. I've had a lot of buddies over the years, you know, said, Cooper, you think you know everything in outdoors? I said, no, I don't, but I know the people that do, people like Alex Rutledge. But I've been so blessed and fortunate. But, you know, from the time I was 7 or 8 years old, Alex, I was playing for my own subscription to Outdoor Life, and it was the absolute dream of mine to write for Outdoor Life one day, and I actually got to do that a little bit 4 or 5 years ago. So I've written for everything from Outdoor Life down to local newspapers. You know, I wrote for Game and Fish publications for 28 years, wrote for Bass Pro for 5 years,
Turkey
Outdoor
Call.
Turkey Call, Turkey and Turkey Hunting.
Field and Stream,
I covered just about all of it. I even wrote for a rabbit hunting magazine one time. They didn't last too long. Called Small Pack Outdoors, man.
I remember it.
Yeah, it was really cool. Southern Trout, gosh, on and on and on, you know. Of course, River Hills Travelers for 30 years, Outdoor Guide Magazine, Adventure Sports Outdoors. You know, as a freelancer, you just pick up what you can, and lasts forever, you know.
That's right. Change. Well, anyway, Bill, your love for smallmouth, when did that start?
It really started after, Alex, I never got out of Mississippi County much, you know. When I was in high school, well, back up a few years now, my dad had a half-sister that married a guy over in Illinois. He was a big shot with Monsanto Chemical, and he used to fish over in the Ozarks, like the trout fish at Montauk, and he was always talking about being able to see fish in clear water, and I thought, man, this guy's drinking too much beer or something, you know, because I never seen clear water. Everything was muddy where I come from. But he intrigued me with his stories about seeing fish in clear water. And I was on a high school trip going to Jeff City, and I crossed a couple of clear water streams. And I actually saw my first deer and wild turkey on that trip. I was like 15 years old.
Wow.
And, man, I just came, I mean, intrigued by the Ozarks. And I wound up going to college, University of Durham, Columbia. So I traveled back and forth from the Boot Hill. I'd go home a different way every time just to get acquainted with the Ozarks. And I made a trip from Columbia down to the Merrimack River to fish and caught my first smallmouth bass. And I'm telling you, I just fell in love with them, you know. First place they live in, you know, clean water. They live in beautiful places. And they're just a wild, wild fish, man. And I never, you know, ounce for ounce, just never had a whole thing that fought like those things did. And that red eye just absolutely intrigued me, man. So then I wound up, I did a little time in the military after college, then wound up as superintendent of Merrimack Spring Park. And, man, I had smallmouth fishing, good smallmouth fishing right in my back, out my back door. And I spent a lot of time on that river. And, Alex, now this is a true story, too. While I was superintendent there at the park, there was a place down on the Merrimack in the park called Gin Beach. It's where the old iron workers used to go down and party, you know. I guess they had means to make a little alcohol, you know. But I was down there fishing early one morning just at daybreak. Now, this is back before the special bass regulations, but here come an old man wading down the river fishing a 12-inch natural-colored rubber worm, and he had a stringer of five smallmouth, and it just broke my heart because there wasn't a fish on that stringer less than 3 pounds, and the biggest one probably pushing five. And they were all going to the frying pan, man. And, you know, and I caught a lot of big smallmouth in that stretch. And it's still some mighty good fishing on the Merrimack.
There is.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this real quick. We've covered spawning fish and pre-spawn fish. Most of the fish are done spawning right now on our rivers right now. We're talking about techniques to catch them. What is some of your favorite techniques right now in catching smallmouth in the Ozark streams?
Okay. We're, talking post-spawn fish and watching Facebook. Guys I listen to and talk to, everybody's talking about catching skinny fish right now. And that's right, because they're spawned out, man. But you know yourself, Alex, you know, you're a highly respected smallmouth fisherman. I know your brother is, too. But when those fish spawn out, you know, man, I mean, they've spent their energy. They're tired. And you'll hear people talking about fish getting hard to catch. And some people really believe in a post-spawn kind of phobia kind of deal where they kind of go dormant and may not feed. Yeah. I hear guys talk about not feeding for 2 or 3 weeks. Now, that's not every fish in the stream.
I agree.
Yeah, your fishing may slow down a bit, but there's still fish out there that's not in that mode and they're going to feed. But think about it. If you could spawn and you lose all that weight, you lose all that energy, you're going to want to conserve energy. So you're not going to be in the strongest currents. And I look for fish in the eddies, in near the woods, near the weeds. And that lasts for a little while, you know, and then those fish start getting their strength back. And they'll start moving back in out in the current more. Now, situation that's going on right now, particularly on the Merrimack, the water's so low that water's down out of a lot of the weeds and a lot of the brush and the woody cover. So fish are kind of forced to be out in those currents. But how do you catch them? You're going to need some patience for one thing. But topwater action has already started. You know, and I'm old-fashioned. I like to throw those old spooks and chuggers. I'll throw an old hula popper once.
You bet.
Yeah, some of them old baits. And, of course, buzz baits are good early in the morning. And I find that those fish early in the morning do hang in the shade and stuff. But it's odd. By noon, you know, sun starts to get tired. Sometimes they head to deeper waters, and you'll catch them out in the current and around the rocks and stuff. But, you know, there's more baits out there to fish with now than there has ever been. And I'm a huge fan of soft plastic. I like to throw those flukes. I like to throw yum baits. They make a bait similar to a fluke called a Houdini shad. It's got a paddle tail on it, and I make another one that's real slim profile with a forked tail. Now, I do really well on those during this time of the year because it's a smaller bait, smaller profile on it, and I don't know what that does to fish psychologically, but sometimes I catch them on those kind of scaled-down baits instead of the regular size or great big baits, and I think it's got something to do, with the energy that they've got.
Wow.
So, and, hey, one of my all-time favorites, and that's all I fished in the summertime for 3 or 4 years one time, was just about a 4-inch mustard-colored tube bait. I got them at Bass Pro. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, those things can be deadly at times.
Wow.
And I lose a lot of them, you know, because I put a heavy jig head in them, bump them across the bottom, and they work. They work.
Yeah, well, that's great information. Wayne's got some questions for you. Got about a couple minutes left in this segment. Then we'll go to segment 4. And I know Wayne's got a question for you.
Actually, we are out of time for this segment, so we're going to come back with a question here on segment 4. And you're listening to American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and his friends.
Hey, y'all, it's Tyler Farr, and you're hanging with me and my good buddy, Alex Rutledge, on American Roots Outdoors.
Accurate, deadly, dependable, Hornady ammunition. From a two-man operation in 1949 to a world-leading innovator of bullet, ammunition, reloading tool, and accessories design and manufacturer today, Hornady, each piece is hand-inspected to ensure consistency and quality. Ammunition engineered to perform flawlessly, simply put, the best. Hornady ammunition. Find Hornady ammunition at a retailer near you and at Hornady.com.
Eagle Seed, Amped Outdoors presents, welcome back to American Roots Outdoors, segment 4 of the show, Mr. Bill Cooper, legendary outdoor writer. This guy is something to listen to. He's someone that's very knowledgeable, and I love to hear him talk, Wayne Redbone.
Yeah, no doubt. I know he was left off in the last segment talking about this, the mustard color 4-inch tube bait that he absolutely just loves to fish during the summertime. Now, out of curiosity, what separates that from like the other soft baits that you had mentioned in the last segment? What was so special about that one?
That is a tremendous question. I'm laid awake at night trying to figure that out. The tube bait, you know, there's not too much to it. It's a straight piece of plastic, but it does have, you know, some fringe on the backside of it where they just slice that tube bait, you know. But all I can figure out is it imitates a crawdad. But that mustard color with some gold flake in it, I wish I had a good answer to that. I'd probably be rich if I had a good answer. but they got to be imitating a crayfish because I fish them on the bottom. And sometimes now when fish are really aggressive, If I bumped a run, you know, and didn't get a hit, I swim that bait back, and it'll have a kind of erratic swing to it, you know. And at that point, it's probably imitating a minnow. But there are days when they just absolutely eat those things up, even little smallmouth.
Mm-hmm.
Try to swallow those things. So that's probably not the greatest answer in the world, but that's just fact, man.
Well, it's got me wanting to go order some as soon as I get off the radio show here.
Well, sometimes it doesn't matter why; it's just the fact that it does.
That it works, right?
Yeah, it works. Who cares why? Yeah, as long as it works, right?
Well, and Wayne, part of the answer to that is, you know, there's a million baits we can choose from out there, and I've got boxes full of baits, you know, that they've sent to me. I've given away more baits to kids. I can never use them all, but. You know, Alex, you know this, when it comes down, you head to the river, you probably got lots of tackle too, but there's always a half a dozen baits that you've got a lot of confidence in.
Exactly.
and that's extremely important. And I think that's why this tube bait is one time, because I used to never use them. And I don't know, I think I was out in Bass Pro for an event, and somebody gave me a bag of mustard colored tube baits. And I thought, man, those things look like puke. That's about the ugliest color I've ever seen.
Tell us, Bill, what size of weight and what type of heads do you use inside, or how do you rig up your tube baits?
Well, I use a tube bait jig head, and depending on the current I'm going to fish in, I fish a lot of quarter ounce, and sometimes I'll go up to a 3/8, about as heavy as I get, because a lot of the rocky cover that I fish, you don't lose a lot of those things. They're going to get stuck down in between the rocks. So buy a big bag when you buy weight.
So do you use a weedless head or just a regular head without a wire or fiberguard?
I have used both, but I prefer without the wire. It seems like I get a lot more hits without that wire. And I think literally a lot of fish bump into that wire or stick them in the roof of mouth or something, and they can spit that bait out pretty quick, you know.
Yeah. So when a fish hits, guys, they inhale. They suck it in.
Right.
You know, they'll run up to it and suck it in. They just suck it in.
Yeah, they sure do.
And a lot of guys, I feel a fish hit, peck, 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 peck. That's usually a perch, usually.
Right.
You know, but a small amount, when they hit it, they'll just either, a lot of hits, they'll just pick it up. Sometimes you won't even feel them. Barely inhale it in, depending on how slow you're working your bait. If you're flowing the top water, though, they really inhale it.
They do. But yeah. A good point on those tube baits, so be sure and carry yourself a good pair of wire cutters, because you get a lot of small fish. I mean, they suck that down in their throat, man. Mm-hmm. And if you try to get it out, you're going to kill that fish. Take a long pair of slim clippers and clip that hook. And it just costs you a hook, you know, but you're saving that fish's life, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed out. I've got two red sticks. You can buy them at Walmart, Bass Pro, and they got a round knob on each end, and they're two different sizes, and they got a cut through them, and you can actually slide your line down there and push that hook out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, then I also carry hemostats with me, doctor's hemostats, a long pair of tweezers, scissors, that I can reach down the throat and get them out. We encourage everybody to release smallmouth. You got a right to keep certain rivers fish to eat. That's your right. But if you want to preserve the smallmouth, we encourage you to turn them loose. And I want to say this, too, before we wrap up the show. You mentioned my brother and being a really good fisherman. Really, he is. There's a lot of great river smallmouth fishermen on the Merrimack, Gastonade, the Current River. And there's all kinds of clubs, Merrimack Bass Club, Gastonade Bass Club, Current River Smallmouth Association. We just created a new series. I don't know if you heard about it yet, Bill, but it's taken off like crazy. It's called River Masters Elite Series.
I already liked it.
Man, we had our first tournament last Saturday. We only had six guys in it. Every one of these guys, you've got to have a top five finish in a tournament, whether it's a largemouth tournament or smallmouth tournament, to fish this river. And, you know, we do not tolerate any negativity whatsoever or trauma. It's a brotherhood. We're giving money back to our communities at the end of the year, and we're doing great things, a mentorship for the kids. We've got prizes at every weigh-in. My brother was blessed to win the first RMES. He won $500 in cash.
Wow.
Out of six guys that fish, we got 24 sponsors at $100 each. If anybody wants to sponsor it, all we ask you is to write a check to River Masters for $100 and get us 54-inch decals made. Those decals go on the sponsor board, but also it's handed out to the fishermen to put on their boats. That's very affordable marketing there at $100 to be promoted like that. The end of the year, we're having a classic championship, and the trophies will be 32 inches, 30 inches, 28, 26, and 24 inches, and there'll be dual column, maybe triple column trophies for the classic championships. The regular tournaments are two columns. Wise Eye Cameras donated a camera for every tournament through the first place winner, a mini cam, $200. So my brother won Big Bass, winner take all. He won $700.
Oh, you better take a lesson from him.
Well, I did. Rick York from Arkansas, from Dauphin, Missouri, he took second. He won, I think, 200, 250. Third place went to Nick Cooper from Cooper Trucking. He won 200. Fourth place went to Dylan Watson. Fifth place went to Jim Santuff. He's a new fisherman, moved in from out west. Absolute. All these guys are hammers. And anybody wants to fish the next tournament, August the 5th, it'll be at Donovan, Missouri. Contact us. You got to be a qualifier, and you got to buy a membership, $100 membership, $100 entry fee, and 100 step pack. I just wanted to mention that. We'll wrap up the show, and I want to say, Bill, you're always full of information. And we've got a bonus segment coming up after this. We're going to dig your brain a little deeper, Wayne Redbone is. They want to learn some more about your techniques catching these river smallmouth. Redbone?
All right, and that should wrap it up, Wayne. We are out of time for today. And again, we want to say on behalf of American Roots Outdoors, all of our gang and our guests today, happy Father's Day this weekend to all the dads out there. Might be a good idea to take your dad fishing. I bet he'd appreciate it. And again, it's Father's Day coming up on Sunday.
And if you're a dad, take your kid fishing. He'll never forget it.
Well, I would like to look at it as the kids taking dad fishing.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. Do something nice for your dad for Father's Day. All right, folks, when you're... roots run deep and strong.
There is no reason to fear the wind.
So you never gotta worry what the wind might do. American Roots.
Thank you for joining us for today's American Roots Outdoors Radio with Alex Rutledge. You can find us on Facebook. Look us up on the World Wide Web at AmericanRootsOutdoors.com. We'll be back again next week on this great radio station.
WiseEye presents American Roots Outdoors with Alex Rutledge and friends. If you're listening to this, that means you are listening to the podcast. We appreciate you being a podcast listener. Be sure to leave us a review. Hopefully you leave us 4 stars along with that review. And make sure you leave your full name and where you're from in the review so we can get a hold of you when we draw winners. I know our special guest here, Mr. Cooper, has something he's going to be giving away. Are given to us that we'll be able to give away next week. So yeah. Get in on that that giveaway, folks. Leave us a review and see what you might win.
All right, and our guest, if you listen to the radio show, is Mr. Bill Cooper, a Hall of Fame angler. And Bill, are you a member of the Legends of the Outdoors Hall of Fame?
No, I think I'm being nominated. I hope I make it.
Okay.
Know,
but, yeah.
Well, I don't know about those things.
Yeah, well, I'll talk to Gary Mason about that.
hey, there you go. Put the pressure on. I duck hunted with him one time.
Oh.
And I think I shot all of his ducks, so he may not want me.
And Gary is a great guy, so I'll put in a word for you. All right, we're talking with Bill about smallmouth fishing, and I would like to start the bonus segment here. We want to get into some more tips and tricks and things like that that you've learned over the years. But you mentioned in the radio show fishing the Merrimack and the smallmouth fishing on the Merrimack River. If you take the Merrimack, Bill, out of the equation, where is your go-to spot for smallmouth fishing? And I mean, if you have another spot where you love to go, I guess is what I'm asking.
Oh, there's lots of them, but you know, I've got 6, 7, 8 rivers within an hour of me. But next place I go to is the Gasconade. Gasconade is one of the top smallmouth fisheries in the state. And I don't know if you're familiar with Tommy Bench or not. He's a guide kind of on the upper Gasconade, raised on the Gasconade, and this guy. Seems like every time he goes, it's catching monster smallmouth, you know. But the Gasconade is a phenomenal fishery. I don't know it as well as I know the Merrimack, but every time I go, I do catch some nice fish. And it's a bigger river, you know, got some deeper holes, some bigger runs, faster runs, but fish it basically the same, use primarily the same baits. Although I do, this time of year, I like to use topwaters a little more on the Gasconade because being a bigger river, you've also got, you'll have bigger log jams, you'll have more banks with overhanging trees, and well, I love to cast back up in those shaded areas, you know. In fact, I shouldn't tell this on myself. I was actually on the Hoosaw one time with Corey Cottle, who's one of the best smallmouth fishermen in the country, and we started early at daylight. In fact, that rascal caught a 3-pound smallmouth while I was putting a canoe in. He didn't bother to help me, so he cast caught a three-pounder on the first cast. But at high noon, I'll never forget it, was getting close to the end of the float, and I still like to throw a crazy old beetle spin once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up an ultralight rod with a 4-pound line on it and sailed it way back up under an overhanging tree, and the water just exploded. Biggest fish of the day, biggest smallmouth I'd ever hooked onto in an Ozark stream. And it lasted about a half a second, you know, ping. And Corey fell back in his seat and he said, "Cooper, why did you use that rod?" He said, "Man, that was a 24-inch smallmouth."
Wow.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the Gasconade, again, is just fabulous, man. There's some big fish caught there in most all the tournaments, and great fishery. But I mentioned the Hoozaw. If I'm just wanting to catch, you know, a lot of numbers of fish just dinking around for a day, I'll go to the Hoozaw and catch a lot of fish. But if I'm wanting a bigger fish, I go to the Merrimack and again, the Gasconade, the Big Piney. Oh, man, mm-hmm. It's just superb. Some big smallmouth there, and you can get in some good topwater flukes. If I had to take one bait on a Big Piney, it'd be a pearl white fluke, you know, and just phenomenal fishing. And of course, being an outdoor rider, I've been fortunate enough to get to go with some of the best fishermen around, because all you got to do, you know, is dangle a little carrot a little bit in front of those guys and offer them some PR, you know, get them on a podcast or write an article. And they're glad to take you. But I've got a reputation for spoiling them, too. I wrote a column for Outdoor Magazine for about a decade called The Gravel Bar Gourmet. All it was about was cooking on the gravel bar.
Mm.
So I always throw my little backpack and stove in a pack and cook steak fajitas for those guys on the gravel bar. Yeah, they'll take you fishing for that.
Yeah, I bet
absolutely.
They would.
I'd take you fishing for that, and I'm not even much of a fisherman. I tell you, down there on the Spring River in Arkansas, I'll catch some of these rainbow trout, and we just do whatever we wanted to do. All right, so Gasconade and Big Piney's in there. Good to hear that from right here in our listening area. What about the current? I mean, Alex, you know, loves to fish the current river. Have you fished the current river?
Oh, yes, yes. I usually fish the upper current, trout mm-hmm. fishing a lot, but I do get south. In fact, I fished it about 4 or 5 years ago, fished with Alex down on the current, down around Dolphin.
Yep.
We had a grand time. I'm glad he's not on the show, because I can tell this now and he won't bite my ears off. Actually, I fished him. I caught the biggest fish. Probably couldn't do that again, you know, but hey, I like to brag about that one time. But we had a grand time, man. We caught some respectable smallmouth. And I think that biggest fish was like 19 inches. I know there are bigger fish in there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my son up around Round Springs one time caught one like 20 inches, which, you know, it's a nice smallmouth anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
For sure. Now, I got a question for you on these topwater and that. I know we over the last few years when we've been talking smallmouth fishing, we really have not covered topwater fishing that much, and you seem to really enjoy it. You know, judging from your talking points earlier in the radio show and that, and you're saying even in the summertime, you're fishing topwater all the way up to noon. What are some of the tricks and that you can share with some of our listeners who maybe have not tried topwater or who have, but maybe just aren't doing it right?
Okay. I think one of the best things you can do for yourself, whether you're in a canoe, I fish in kayak a lot, and I got a small jet boat that I run. But if you're going to start early in, at first light, and you can pick up a lot of early fish, but one of the best things you can do for yourself is rig as many rods as you can handle, because conditions change rapidly as you're floating mm-hmm. down a river. Yeah, you can, some people got spot lock, or you can use your trolling motor to hold you in place sometime, but most of the time you're moving, and conditions can change very quickly. If I've got a lot of weeds and moss, I won't throw a topwater frog into that moss and run it across there. If it opened up a little bit, I might throw a fluke, drop it in the holes in that moss. I may slide a worm across there. But my point is, I always have at least 6 rods rigged with different baits, and it only takes you, you know, 4 or 5 seconds to lay one rod down, pick up the other, and you're in a position to cast. Now, I mentioned the word position. People, one of the hardest things for people to learn on these rivers and casting you know, you got to hit the right spots. You got to cast accurately, but both positioning is extremely important in being able to get an accurate cast. I mean, if you're floating by a log or a bunch of logs, but there's good water behind it, you got to get that boat in a position so that you can hit the spot where you know those fish are holding. And again, you know, we hear lots of the best fishermen saying that, you know, 90% of the fish are in 10% of the water. Mm-hmm. And that's almost true in a river situation, too. You learn through experience what places to throw those baits and what places to skip. And sometimes even the spots you skip may hold fish. But you learn through experience as you go, you know, where to toss those baits. And I'm telling you what, don't be bashful. If you're in a club, don't be bashful about asking one of the better fishermen to take you. Because a day on the water with a good fisherman, you know, cuts light years off of that learning curve,
yeah.
Man, because I know back in the old days, you know, I learned by trial and error, but then as I got, you know, more experienced as a rider and got to go with better fishermen, man, did they ever teach me some tricks.
Yeah.
And it's odd from year to year, it seemed like bass, like their taste changes. Like I mentioned, the tube baits, I used to fish them a lot years ago, don't fish them as much now. And some of the other baits have come along. There's so many good crayfish imitations, and smallmouth are going to eat crayfish all year long. In fact, I just talked to a good smallmouth fisherman this morning that said he was on the Gasconade over the weekend, and he caught a 19-inch smallmouth, and said it just come in like a dead stick, you know. He thought maybe it spawned out. It was skinny, but he said as soon as he lifted that fish, it regurgitated all this orange liquid up on his nice, clean fishing shirt, and it was crayfish. That
wow.
Fish was gorged with crayfish and then spit them up when it was stressed a little bit, you know.
Wow.
So, hey, crayfish?
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, when you catch them, they start on the top.
Yeah, Bill, remember back, 25, 30, maybe even 35 years ago, there was a company called Mr. Twister. They used to make a brown and orange Mr. Twister with a spinner bait on it.
I still got some of them.
Do you really? I love fishing those. There's a little river runs here in the Thayer area called the Warm Fork. And if you wanted to catch smallmouth bass, we called them brownies back then. If you wanted to catch them brownies on the Warm Fork, you threw a brown and orange Mr. Twister, and you could catch them. I don't care if it was daybreak, middle of the afternoon, or in the evening just before sundown. They would hit those things all day long.
They're great bait. And if you shop around, I know I go to Bass Pro, you know, two or three times a year down in Springfield.
Uh-huh.
They got bins of bait, just, you know,
cheapy
plastics. But I have found them in those bins. And, man, I'll buy, you know, you pay $2 or $3 a pound or something for them. I'll buy 3 pounds of them.
Brown and orange, Mr. Twister. And Wayne can testify. I always mention the brown and orange.
I say he mentions that all the time.
They were fantastic. And you know, some of the big box stores don't have them anymore. I don't know what happened to them. Anyway, Wayne, we're about out of time already.
We are, unfortunately. And I want to get Mr. Cooper here back on because if memory serves me correctly here, you also have a bit of knowledge on fly fishing, don't you?
Oh, I love fly fishing. I don't have time to tell the story about getting my first fly rod, but it rates right up there with that carp story, you know.
Well,
we'll tell it.
I'm going to talk to Alex and see if we can get you on next week, maybe talk a little fly fishing and that, because that's I love fly fishing for bass. Coming from Cleveland, Ohio up there, that was one of the things I did all the time was river fish with my fly rod for bass. And I mentioned it to Alex, and he just looks at me funny. I guess down here that's like nobody does it, so I would be like way out in left field on that. But, man, did I enjoy it.
I can enlighten Alex. I was on the river just a month ago with a young guy from Jefferson City catching 4-pound smallmouth on 8-inch streamers. Yeah.
Ooh, buddy. I used to love tying my own flies and everything.
Wow.
Yep, that's we'll see if we can get you on next week if you're available. That would be fantastic.
Oh, I'd be tickled. I love to talk fishing.
Well, Bill Cooper, we appreciate it very much. Happy Father's Day to you. As we're recording this here before Father's Day, I know people will be listening to it from now on the podcast. The beauty of the podcast on the internet, they're available anytime you want to hear them.
That's right. And if you miss any of the radio show, you can catch the whole radio show and the bonus segment, too.
Wrap it up, Wayne.
And like we say here at American Roots Outdoors, when your roots run deep and strong,
there's no reason to fear the wind.
We'll be waiting when they hit the ground. Big time coming, it's what we do. From a whippoorwill to an old owl's hoot. Sitting still till it's time to shoot.